Good afternoon, everybody. My great pleasure to welcome John this afternoon to talk to us a little bit about the Blueprint for Actuarial Education. For those of you who don't know John, I'm sure most of you do, he first taught actuarial students in 1984, based full-time at Macquarie University since 87, and has over those years taught thousands of actuarial and non-actuarial students in Australia, some of whom are probably in this room. Also Canada, US, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, Kazakhstan and China. In fact, the course he designed and delivered in Kazakhstan helped to establish an actuarial profession there. And now Kazakh actuaries, I'll try saying that, have recently taught courses for the first actuaries in Azerbaijan as well. He's taught seminars for Society of Actuaries and for the UK profession. In 2007, John was the Rooney Visiting International Scholar at Robert Morris University near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's also received several university teaching awards, the Macquarie University Outstanding Teacher Award in 1996 and 2005, were followed in 2006 by a Carrick Institute Award for Teaching Excellence, just one of just three national awards that year for Australian university teachers in law, economics, business and related areas. John also currently serves on the Institute's Communications Task Force with me, and on its commercial actuarial practice review. And has been involved in presenting at actuarial education at every convention except for one since 1993. And one of his claims to fame is starring in a YouTube video on the Macquarie website. So without further ado, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Leslie. I should probably have entitled this Towards a Blueprint for an Actuarial Education, because it's very much a work in progress. And it's, I guess, a distillation of what I've learned about actuarial education over the last 22 years or so. But I think it's still got a long way to go before it distills into a coherent blueprint. Maybe I can have something ready for South Africa next year. Let me apologise, first of all, for not providing a paper. Briefly, the reason for that is that I wasn't really expecting to be presenting at this convention. I missed the deadline for submitting a proposal last November and actually decided not to come when the convention moved from Perth to Sydney. But I got an email a couple of weeks ago from the program committee saying they'd had a cancellation and there was a spare slot, and I can't give up the opportunity of having a captive audience. So I finished the presentation this morning. There's no paper, and my wife keeps reminding me, you are on long service leave, you know. So here's what I'd like to do. Firstly, just briefly outline my perspective so that you know where I'm coming from. And secondly, look at the wisdom of some presidents. Now, this group of presidents doesn't include Barack Obama. It's presidents... No, not George, definitely not George. It's a group of presidents of actuarial professions, most of them from the UK, and I'll explain why. Not that I think they have a mortgage on wisdom, but it was convenient to do it that way. And then I'll sort of outline a few main features of my blueprint, in particular stressing that an actuary is more than just technical knowledge, and trying to identify what other capabilities an actuary needs. Secondly, in the context of university actuarial education, encouraging the recognition of whole degrees rather than individual subjects within degrees. Thirdly, talking about how best the profession might supervise actuarial education in universities, and suggesting that a principles-based approach would be the best approach. And finally, thinking about reshaping actuarial education. And then a few thoughts on innovation in actuarial education, and in particular, looking at problem-based learning, and I'll explain what that is. In thinking about actuarial education, I'm really restricting myself to what we currently call Part 1 and Part 2. So I'm not specifically addressing Part 3, although some of the things that I say might be relevant there as well. So what's my perspective? Well, it comes from, as Leslie outlined, over 22 years teaching thousands of actuarial and other students at Macquarie and also in other places. Teaching actuarial control cycle students in many countries via the internet, teaching for the Society of Actuaries, teaching for the UK profession in residential type seminars, which run in a similar way to our own commercial actuarial practice course. I have a graduate diploma in education and a master's in higher education. I simply mention that because that's part of my perspective. In trying to understand my students' learning, I've looked at what we know about learning and teaching. And my research focus at Macquarie is student learning. The wisdom of presidents. I've looked at some comments that various presidents of mostly the Institute of Actuaries in the UK have said about education over the years. But I'm not suggesting that UK actuarial presidents have a monopoly on wisdom. Of course, there's plenty of that available from Australian and North American presidents as well, not to mention other countries. But I happened to read the presidential address of Peter Clark, the late Peter Clark, who I was fortunate enough to meet a number of times. He's a lovely guy. And it was his presidential address that sort of set me onto this theme. That was delivered in 2000. And most of the presidential quotes that I'll mention come from Peter Clark's address, which he entitled Communication, Culture and Companionship. And I can recommend it as a good read. First quote comes from A.H. Roll, who was president of the Institute of Actuaries in 1946. One still meets, I'm afraid, as an echo of the past, the suggestion that the actuary is a remote, academic and altogether superior person, a cross between a high priest performing mysterious rites and a Delphic oracle speaking Greek in riddles, and even then only upon receipt of a large fee. That out-of-date criticism, said Roll in 1946, of the profession will, I suggest, be killed very soon by the spirit already described. It should be killed, not merely left to die. Well, let me just ask you at this point to think about whether or not you think that out-of-date criticism has been killed, or is it still alive? What is this spirit that Roll mentions towards the end of that quote? Well, I think there's a clue in another part of his address where he said, the newly qualified actuary must be young. He should emerge stimulated by his course of training and examination, not exhausted by a long-drawn struggle, alive and alert enough to wish to contribute by his further studies to the vitality of the profession. Young, stimulated, not exhausted, alive, alert, vitality. Lots of positives there. Remember too that, you know, this was the era before political correctness, so maybe we can forgive Raoul his use of the masculine gender. I think there's a useful benchmark there, though, for evaluating the quality of new fellows. It's not a bad benchmark. Maybe we could use it as the basis for a survey of graduates of the professionalism course. This quote comes from Ronald Skerman in his presidential address of 1970. Too long a period devoted to exacting studies and examinations can narrow a man's mind rather than broaden it. And even worse, it can narrow a man's personality and outlook. And I think it's worth thinking about the selective effect of the actuarial exam process. You know, perhaps it still, even today, has a narrowing effect. And in fact, reminds me that at this point, I might, if I can, no, I can't. I was going to skip to a later slide, but it seems I can't do that. Anyway, we'll get to it eventually. Because later on I've got a comment from an actuarial student, which is relevant at that point, I just realised. Communicating with whom? Well, Peter Clark himself, in his presidential address, said this: "I spent a delightful 3 years in Oxford studying mathematics, and in the third year specialised in abstruse pure mathematics. At the end of this process, this highly enjoyable process, I achieved a first-class degree without having to string two English words together. I had demonstrated significant ability to communicate with the mathematical cognoscenti, no more and no less." On the other hand, Chris Dakin, president, in his presidential address from 1994, reminds us not to be lured by the siren of generalism, or we may lose our distinctiveness. We need to reassert that the actuarial profession is a mathematical discipline. It is the rigour of mathematics and the immense potential of mathematical modelling which give flavour to the role of the actuary. And I don't think anyone would argue with that. But it's a question of balance, I suggest. Arthur Bailey, president in 1880, said, "An actuary, then, must be a mathematician, but a mere mathematician will be a very incompetent actuary." So it's a question of balance. Is the balance right? That's one of the questions I think we need to think about. And on this question of balance, Jim Pegler, who was president of the Institute of Actuaries in 1968, talked about three stages in the development of a professional actuary, once again being politically incorrect. The first stage is when he is learning the meaning of the technical terms in order to be initiated into the mysteries of his profession. The second is when he has learned to use these freely and can thus freely exchange ideas with his professional colleagues. The third is when he has learned not to use them and can thus communicate freely with the layman. And then follows the first phrase, the first sentence. Only at the third stage can he claim to be a professional man. So Jim Pegler, 1968. Pegler implies there a sort of linear progression, that there are stages that must be passed through. I'm not sure that that's how it has to be. It seems to me that it's possible to integrate the development of both the technical knowledge and capabilities like communication right through the educational process. And one more president. This president was voted by readers of the UK magazine The Actuary as the UK's greatest ever actuary, and that's Frank Rannington, of course, and his very well-known saying, "As a profession, we are apt to be accurate, cautious, consistent and reticent, and in these lies our strength. But if they do not leave enough room for impulse and imagination, they can be a weakness. The actuary who is only an actuary is not an actuary." I like to use that last sentence with my actuarial students. Introduce them to it, first of all, at the beginning of first year, and then come back to it in the control cycle in fourth year and ask them what they think Rannington meant. So I think I don't claim to know what was in Rannington's mind, but I think it's something well worth thinking about. So that's the wisdom of the presidents. How can we apply that to developing a blueprint for an actuarial education? And I'm going to be unashamedly idealistic here and think about what we might have if a lot of the practical constraints and restraints were not major issues. And I think the first characteristic of the blueprint, the first feature of the blueprint, is recognising that actuarial capabilities go beyond technical knowledge. You know, currently our curriculum focuses almost exclusively, particularly in Part 1 and Part 2, on technical knowledge. And that knowledge is a necessary attribute for an actuary, but it's not sufficient for a good actuarial practice, I would suggest. And several presidents in those quotes that we looked at, I think, noted that a good actuary is more than a technician. The development of actuarial capabilities needs to be recognised, I think, as a developmental process. Commercial providers of things like communications courses might like us to think that, you know, if you spend a day and a couple of $1,000 with them, they will provide you with all the skills you will ever need in for a lifetime of communicating. But I don't think it is that simple. It seems to me it's a developmental process, and that we're all developing capabilities like communication from the time we first start to talk until the time we die. And I think we need to recognise the need to integrate capability development with developing technical knowledge. And I think there are a number of good reasons for that, not least of which is that if students have to write about, give presentations about the technical knowledge that they're acquiring and have to think about how that knowledge can be applied, then they're going to understand the technical knowledge better. They're going to have a deeper understanding, a better grasp of what it's all about. So there's a double benefit. Not only are they developing their capabilities, but they're also, at the same time, developing a deeper understanding of the technical knowledge. And, you know, I think we need to recognise too that many actuarial employers provide invaluable mentoring for their developing and younger actuaries. But at the same time, I think the profession has to ensure that all future actuaries develop the capabilities of good practice. Sure, there's a lot of good stuff happens in the workplace, but it does every future actuary have access to that same level of support and development in the workplace? What are these actuarial capabilities? Well, I don't want to spend a lot of time on identifying what they are, but one version, thanks to Jules Gribble, looks like this. In addition to technical expertise, problem-solving skills, critical thinking or critical evaluation skills, flexibility, creativity, rigorous analysis, ability to see the big picture, ability to adopt a strategic approach and an appreciation of a strategic approach, integrity, self-management, interpersonal skills, negotiation skills, communication skills, and business acumen. Another version from the Institute survey of employers a couple of years ago, very similar. I won't go through them all because there's a lot of overlap there. And a couple of other dimensions might be identified there, but you know, the degree of overlap is significant. Looking around at what other professions recognise as desirable capabilities, I found an interesting list compiled by Moulton and Lowe. They were thinking of engineers rather than actuaries, and they listed these personal abilities as being desirable for engineers in the early part of their careers: being willing to face and learn from errors and listen openly to feedback. Sorry, Phil?
Why only the early part of their career?
Well,
okay.
Good point. But I think that's an interesting one, because if you contrast that with the culture of, let's say, part one of the actuarial exams, I mean, errors are things that you have to hide from the examiners. Errors are not opportunities to learn something. Errors are things that you have to hide. So we come back to this idea of culture. You know, does the culture encourage that sort of thing? Understanding personal strengths and limitations. I think that's an important pre-professional attribute. Being confident to take calculated risks and take on new projects. Being able to remain calm under pressure or when things go wrong. Having the ability to defer judgment and not to jump in too quickly to resolve a problem. A willingness to persevere when things are not working out as anticipated. Wanting to produce as good a job as possible. Being willing to take responsibility for projects, including how they turn out, an ability to make a hard decision, a willingness to pitch in and undertake menial tasks when needed, having a sense of humour, and being able to keep work in perspective. Well, that's an interesting collection of capabilities from another profession, but I think most of those we can probably apply to our own as well. Second feature of my blueprint is, and I'm assuming here, a university-based actuarial education, recognising a whole degree, and I say that as opposed to the current system whereby the profession awards exemptions from CT equivalent subjects individually. For example, you know, a grade of a certain specified minimum level in this subject or this pair of subjects from an accredited university earns an exemption from subject CT5. That's the way we tackle it at the moment. One problem with this approach is that it, within actuarial degree programs, it creates two classes of subject. And some of those subjects are more equal. All subjects are equal, but some are more equal than others. You know, there are exemption subjects and there are non-exemption subjects. So the hidden agenda there, the implied message for actuarial students, is that your learning in the non-exemption subjects is not important to becoming an actuary and is not valued by the profession. What you have to do is do well in the exemption subjects. Now, the non-exemption subjects might well be the subjects that are helping to support the development of the capabilities we've been talking about. But the implied message is they don't matter. They're not important for becoming an actuary. Solution, I think, recognise a whole degree from an accredited university rather than on a subject-by-subject basis. Set a minimum standard, if you like, for the overall degree, but do it on the basis of the whole degree rather than on a subject-by-subject basis. And that will remove this this two types of subject problem. Third feature, how best to accredit university programs. Well, I'd suggest the best approach would be something like this. And what I've done here is to paraphrase a statement about APRA's approach to the regulation of financial institutions. The Institute of Actuaries of Australia's approach to supervision of university actuarial education is principles-based rather than relying on prescriptive rules. A principles-based approach is one that emphasises learning outcomes in setting educational requirements and expectations, but does not seek to specify or prescribe the exact manner in which those outcomes must be achieved. So this gives universities more flexibility, more room to move in devising how they're going to provide for their students achieving the specified learning outcomes. And in particular, flexibility in the approach to assessment, which I think is particularly important. The current approach, under the current approach, universities seeking accreditation are asked to demonstrate that their programs cover a minimum proportion of the largely knowledge-based syllabus. Well, I think rather than take that approach, what will be more useful would be to ask universities seeking accreditation to demonstrate how their programs support the development of the specified learning outcomes and how the achievement of those outcomes is assessed. Another room for change, I think, is in the area of teaching within university programs. At the moment, universities seeking accreditation are asked to demonstrate the actuarial qualifications of the teachers in their program, but not their teaching qualifications, which seems to me rather odd, because what the profession is asking universities to do is to teach. So ought we not take an interest in the teaching quality within those university programs? All we ask is, what actuarial qualifications do your teaching staff have? We don't ask about educational qualifications, teaching qualifications and expertise. I'd suggest that we should, you know, speaking as a member of the profession, that we should be doing that. And here's that student perspective that I wanted to get at earlier. This is one of our current control cycle students at Macquarie. And as part of an online discussion, we asked the students to comment on an excerpt from Trevor Thompson's presidential address. Trevor apparently commented on the fact that there are few actuaries who are also entrepreneurs. And this is one of our students' response. Trevor Thompson expresses surprise that there are so few actuaries who are also entrepreneurs. I'm not at all surprised, at least for the ones who make it through the UK Part 1 exams. It seems to me that the exam process selects people with the ability to memorise detail, use calculators fast and accurately, and take meticulous care in complicated calculations. These may well be good skills for actuaries to have, at least in the pre-computer days, but I would guess that they rarely come together with the skills of the entrepreneur. I thought this student had a good point and well expressed. See, some of them can string words together. Another feature of the blueprint would be, I think, that it would encourage and allow a broader range of forms of assessment. And I've just tried to list here some of the possible forms available. At the moment, in my opinion, there's too much reliance on exams, but we need to broaden that out. And then finally, the blueprint. I think we need to look again at the shape of actuarial education. What I mean by that is that at the moment we start with a foundation of, if you like, you know, to generalise, hard science, you know, statistics, financial mathematics. You know, a lot of scientists might say, well, that's not really hard science, but within the actuarial realm, this is kind of like our hard science. And then after that, we start to look at some of the underlying principles behind the actuarial financial management of products and services or financial schemes in the control cycle subject. Then we move on in part three to something which is much closer to the reality of actuarial practice. And then finally, of course, there is actuarial practice. If you like, that's a lot like the traditional approach to medical education, where you start with physiology and anatomy and physics and chemistry, the hard science, and then you move into the sort of applied science, and then finally, towards the top, you get to clinical practice. Well, in recent years, the medical profession, at least as it's taught in many universities, has turned that upside down and used an approach which has become known as problem-based learning, whereby medical students in week one of semester one of year one are organised into teams and presented with a problem that, let's say, a general practitioner might be confronted with in a surgery, and they're asked to go away and work together as a team to find out what they need to know in order to diagnose what's wrong with this patient and come up with a treatment plan. So a totally different approach. They're not given lectures on the required knowledge beforehand. They go away and find it out themselves. So as the final element of my blueprint, I'd suggest that we need to think about reshaping actuarial education. Why? I think there's a number of reasons. To be consistent with good pedagogy, to improve the quality of both core knowledge, understanding and capability development, to develop better individual lifelong learners, to match professional education in other disciplines. I think sadly we're even lagging behind the accountants, which really hurts. To produce a more diverse professional membership, to provide starting actuarial students with a learning framework, because, you know, if you think about it, compare your starting actuarial student, your starting medical student, your starting legal student, who's got the fuzziest idea of what they're ultimately going to be doing? I think it's the actuarial student. To allow learners to revisit the control cycle concept from time to time at increasing levels of sophistication in a cyclic process. And to change the focus from convergent thinking, I've got to get the right answer. Have I got the right answer or not, to divergent thinking. And as one practical suggestion, I think we could encourage innovation in actuarial education by experimenting with problem-based learning. You know, several other professional and non-professional disciplines have adopted PBL. It seems to me it's worth testing in actuarial studies. So maybe the profession could encourage one or more accredited universities to test it out, not across the whole program to begin with, but perhaps in a particular area. And the control cycle would be one obvious candidate. And PBL is not it's not a new thing. It's been around for decades, and it's well established with a well established literature. So there's a brief outline of my blueprint, but I'd like to know what you think. So comments and questions would be most welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Round of applause. welcome some questions and comments. A lot of really interesting points raised there. If you could use the microphone, please, and state your name, age, serial number, and then ask your question, that would be great. Who'd like to start?
Jenny Lyon. John, the problem-based learning, it was interesting you brought in the whole what the medical profession are doing, because as you were talking earlier, I was thinking about the fact that now when you do medicine to be accepted, you don't just use the UAI, there's an alternative process for being accepted into medicine. So I'm interested to know whether you think that would be a good approach for the actuarial profession, just because I think one of the things you can change is the whole actuarial education process, but it is also to some extent affected by the candidates that we're attracting into the profession. So I guess that was one point, and then that sort of links into the problem-based learning, that if you introduce that earlier in the course, it's going to help students decide whether this is really what they want to do, because my experience would be that a lot of them graduate and it's really only at the very end that they go and they talk to employers, or they come and talk to us and they find out that, oh, actually communication and interpersonal skills are a big part of this job. That's not how they have perceived it when they've decided to go into the actuarial profession. Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny. Yeah, that reminds me too that we routinely ask our new first year actuarial students why they chose actuarial studies. And one reason that commonly appears is that, and you can understand it, it's quite understandable, well, I'm good at maths and I don't like writing essays. That fits nicely with what you're saying. To go back to the first part, the approach to recruitment, I'm not convinced that UAI is the best way to choose actuarial students. We've not done it any differently at Macquarie because nobody was particularly keen to, for example, to interview the hundreds of applicants that there would probably be every year. Interviewing would obviously be one other possible way. But yes, I agree that's something that we ought to look at too. And it ties up again with this notion that 18-year-olds, like most other people in the community, don't have a clear idea of what an actuary is and does, and it does make it difficult to make a career choice. Having a sort of scaled down version of the control cycle subject up front as the first actuarial subject, I think goes some way towards meeting that problem. I agree with your comment that using problem-based learning up front would also help to alleviate that problem. Would give students a much better taste of what they're actually getting themselves into. Yeah, thanks for that.
Cecil Bikerk from Society of Actuaries in the U.S. Just a comment first and a question. I've thought for years, or did think for years, that we enticed people into the actuarial profession by back when we gave part one, which is calculus and then probability and statistics and so forth. And we've moved away a little ways away from that, but not very far. And when I taught actuarial science at the University of Nebraska back in the, I don't know how long ago it was, but back in the 70s, we had a course that we had students take before they took any other actuarial science course, which was basically a baby contingencies course, almost non-mathematical. It certainly was not calculus-based. But the reason was that it gave students an introduction to what an actuary, at least part of what an actuary does, and wasn't so reliant on the math part of the curriculum. Yeah. But anyway, those are just comments. Mm-hmm. Coming from the actuarial world, where most of our new actuaries do not attend an actuarial school, how have you thought about how your blueprint might be translated into that world?
Well, the quick answer is no. I've assumed pretty much the Australian model, where the majority of students are going through an undergraduate university program in actuarial studies. I guess my response to that would be, why bother? Why not make the university actuarial programs the only route to actuarial qualification? And I guess I've wondered for some time why North America didn't move in that direction.
Why hasn't the U.S. moved? Canadians.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, Joanne Morgan. And the other component of that too, potentially around the problem-based solutions, is work experience and how that mm-hmm. might, in fact, tie in. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. brings in the same concept of effectively tackling problems as you're developing your technical skills. Mm-hmm. And what your thoughts on that and how you might incorporate that into a university program.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think that's a good thought, Joanne, and an important one. Yeah, and in fact, the fact that you raised it sort of leads me to suggest that if the Institute did want to experiment with problem-based learning, a good place to start might be Curtin University, where everything is fresh and new, and those words that. One of the UK presidents used young, stimulated, alive, alert, vitality. Everything has not got locked down in concrete as it may have become in some of the universities that have been doing actuarial studies for a longer time. So I'd be thinking along those terms. And I think you're absolutely right that the work experience would be an invaluable component, so long as it was, and I think this is the key thing, so long as it's integrated with the curriculum. I think work experience is at its most valuable when it's integrated with what's being learned. I think that's one of the lessons we've learned from internships. Is that our bill?
Could you also think of having a graduate intake? Because I think in the old days, there were more electrical engineers, all sorts of people coming into the profession who never heard that they could have become an actuary before graduating, and not just start. As the doctors are doing too. I mean, they're bringing a lot more people from
Yeah, that's a good point. And of course, there are many valued members of the profession who came by that route. But just one quick comment. I think the thing that we're not so good at is providing those people with an accelerated route. If it's going to take them too long, then it's not attractive. Yeah, but that's a good point.
Oh, quick, that was... Damn, I had three. At left field, why don't we do like the lawyers and insist people do a double degree so they don't just specialise in actuarial, they get a broader view. Next one was problem-based learning. I definitely agree with. I've been privately running tutorials in Part 3 in general insurance, and I get people that have never learned to solve a problem. And mostly what I do in those tutorials is I give them problems and we work through how to solve problems. Yeah. And that gets very good results. I get pass rates much higher than the average. And then finally, another out of left field, the skill set. You haven't talked about skill set. You've talked about, I'm putting technical skill set that's coming out of uni, isn't really useful for general insurance. Yeah. The coursework seems to be very focused on superannuation and life insurance. So I get people that don't know how to do data analysis and don't know how to do any computing.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Colin. We're out of time, so can we all put our hands together? Thank you very much indeed, Jane.